Welcome to the preaching ministry of Dale Scribner, Senior Pastor of New Hope Christian Fellowship, located in Olympia, Washington. Let us join Pastor Dale as he shares today's message.
For so long, but today we're going into the book of Psalm 139. As you all know, our son is struggling with MS, and some days are good and some days are terrible. But this past week, he went to Seattle, and he now has a doctor, the same doctor that Christina has. And we have all seen the miraculous changes in her body, but she still struggles with it. And Dan told me that when he was in the doctor's office, he almost had a meltdown and almost started crying because he said, "Dad, finally, I have a doctor that understands what I'm going through." And so he was really encouraged. Going to be talking today about a portrait of God through the eyes of the psalmist David. Subject of today's message is the God who knows it all, Psalm 139, the first six verses. Now, we all know what trivia is. As a matter of fact, that's the game that we used to play years ago, Trivia Pursuit. Does anyone still play that game today? Well, we have one faithful game player back there, and that really was fun to play in my days anyway. I don't play it anymore, but all the stuff that people pursue in their trivial pursuit, and you couldn't help but say to yourself, "Huh, wow," creativity at work in your brain as you played that game. But you know what? All that trivia pursuit, really, bottom line is, nothing more than a bunch of worthless information. That's all that it is. There's a lot of stuff. You know, there's some lyrics to songs that I have in my heart, one of which we sung this morning, As the Deer, one of my favorite praise songs. But then there were other lyrics to the songs that I don't remember all the words. And I have built a compartment in my brain, and this compartment is getting bigger the older that I get. And the name of this compartment is Worthless Information. I have a lot of information up there that doesn't do anybody any good, all this knowledge that we accumulate. Now, I'm going to share some things with you that I bet you didn't know. Number one, no piece of paper can be folded over seven times. Now, don't you try to do that with your bulletin as I speak this morning. Number two, I bet you didn't know this, that donkeys kill more people annually than plane crashes. It's true, but it's kind of worthless information. Mosquito repellents don't repel, they hide you. The spray blocks the mosquito sensors so they don't know that you're there. I wonder if you knew this. Now listen up. Next time you go to the dentist, you might want to share this with him or her. That dentists recommend that you keep your toothbrush 6 feet from your toilet to avoid airborne particles that can result from the flush. Now that is good news to know. Trust that your hygiene will change after today's message. I wonder if you knew that the liquid inside young coconuts can be used as a substitute for blood plasma. Did you know that? Bet you didn't know that. Or, now listen to this. This is my favorite one. I bet you didn't know that you burn more calories sleeping than you do watching television. Now, I like that. I go to bed between 8:30 and 9 o'clock anymore, folks, and I wake up about 5:30, 6 o'clock every morning. But you burn more calories sleeping than you do watching television. Listen to this. I bet you didn't know this. A Boeing 747's wingspan is longer than the Wright brothers' first flight. Or listen to this. I bet you didn't know this. American Airlines saved $40,000 in 1987 by eliminating one olive from each salad served in first class. Wow. I bet you didn't know what I'm about to say next. Here we go. I bet you didn't know that apples, not caffeine, are more efficient at waking you up in the morning. Did you know that? I'm not going to try that, but that's what to say. And listen to this. Most dust particles in your house are made from dead skin. Now, I bet you'll hang on to that one. Michael Jordan makes more money annually from Nike than all of the other Nike factory workers in Malaysia combined. Listen to this. Bet you didn't know this. It takes 3,000 cows to supply the NFL with enough leather for 1 year's supply of footballs. And finally, bet you didn't know this. Maybe you do. 35% of the people who are using personal ads on social media are already married. Did you know that? Wow. Now, when I read all that stuff, you probably didn't know all that stuff. I didn't know that either until I read the article. And if you did know all of those things before I told you, then you're probably a pretty miserable person to hang around with anyway. So, you ever run into somebody that you're thinking to yourself, you know what, they can't possibly know all that stuff. They're nothing more than a know-it-all. How many of you have ever ran into a know-it-all? Or they think they know it all. And they always have to add something to what you said or elaborate on a commentary on what you said to enlighten you. They always seem to know more than you know about what you are bringing up in a topic of conversation. You know, actually, when you think about this, potentially Jesus could be a difficult person to hang around with because he knows everything. He knew everything. He displayed this characteristic that we're about to discuss this morning, one of the attributes of God, and we find it here in Psalm 139. It's called the attribute of omniscience. The attribute of omniscience, which means that God knows everything. He knows everything. Now, it would be really tough hanging around Jesus in his day because he knows everything. You know, if you'd say to Jesus, I was thinking, and yeah, Jesus replied, let me finish your sentence. He already knows what we're thinking. But you know, it's interesting that Jesus did not use this attribute against someone to attack them or to intimidate them. In fact, he was so approachable, wasn't he, as you read through the Gospels. He used all-knowing omniscience. When he used it in one of two ways, either to rebuke the religious leaders of his day who were against him, or to draw his disciples close to him. That's how he used this attribute. I really enjoy reading the Gospel of John. We've been in it for a long time on Wednesday mornings and on Sunday mornings recently. And I like reading the story of how Jesus found Nathanael. Philip found Nathanael. And Philip says, hey, bud, we have found the one the prophets told us about that was coming, the coming Messiah. We have found him, Nathanael. His name is Jesus of Nazareth. And then Nathanael said, can anything good ever come out of Nazareth? And Philip said, well, buddy, come check it out. And so Nathanael comes to Jesus, and Jesus sees Nathanael coming. And now, a little bit about Nathanael. Nathanael seems to have had this secret hideout that nobody knew about. I think that Nathanael was kind of a loner. He spent a lot of his time alone, and his secret hideout was this fig tree. He kind of liked to go and park himself underneath this fig tree and hang out there to be alone. And Jesus looked at him and said, "Behold," as he saw Nathanael coming toward him, "an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." And Nathanael said, "Excuse me? How did you know that about me?" And Jesus says, "Well, when you were under that fig tree, I saw you." And at that point, Nathanael just goes ballistics. "You are the Son of God, and you are the promised one," he says. And Jesus said, "You said all of that because I saw you under the fig tree? Well, Nathanael, hang around with me for a while because you haven't seen anything yet that I'm about to show you." And so he used this attribute of being all-knowing to make disciples. And one of the first questions that people ask, especially when we are children, is, what is God like? What does God look like? And in this kindergarten class, the assignment was for the kids to do a little artwork. And so as these children were doing some art, the teacher would walk around the room and look over the shoulder to see what they were drawing. And she came to this one girl who was drawing something so intently. It was a picture. She realized that. And so the teacher stopped and out of curiosity said, "Well, what are you drawing?" And she says, "Well, drawing Jesus." And the teacher said, "Well, nobody has ever seen Jesus. Nobody knows what he looks like." And the little girl said, "Well, they will when I'm through with my drawing." Psalm 139 is what God looks like from David's perspective. And if you really want to know what God looks like, turn to Psalm 139. And here we have a portrait of what God looks like through the eyes of David. It's a picture of his attributes, what God is like. Now, these are not trivial facts. These are essential facts. And by the way, David has not given us a lecture here on theology. It's his own personal musings on the nature and character of God. And I call Psalm 139 a wow psalm. As David begins to acquire the knowledge of how all-knowing God is, his only reply was, "Wow, this is a wow psalm." And look at verse 1, for example. Look what he says. "O Lord, you search me and known me. You know my setting down and my rising up. You understand my thoughts afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You have hedged behind me behind and before, and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful." It's high. I cannot contain it. This is David's wow picture of God. It's just too wonderful for me to comprehend. Now, as you look through this psalm, you'll discover that, first of all, David states the knowledge of God that's stated in verse 1. Let's go back to verse 1, where he makes the statement of what God is like. He says, "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my setting down and my rising up. You understand my thoughts afar off." Now, on the general level, this is called the omniscience of God, the all-knowing God. That's a theological term that is used to describe one of the attributes of God. God knows everything. He knows everything. He has infinite information. He's the ultimate knower of all things, past, present, and future. Everything we can possibly imagine, God already knows it. Which means that God knows more about every single field than any other expert in that field. Stop and think about it for a moment. God knows more about astronomy than the expert astronomer. God knows more about biology than the biologist. God knows more about theology than the theologian or pastor or any other Christian. God is the ultimate knower. He knows more about counseling than any counselor. Sometimes women will say, I just don't understand men. God does. Sometimes men say, I just don't understand women. God does. I can't figure them out. God can. And miraculous sounds, God even understands teenagers. How about that? Sometimes we don't. The attribute of knowing everything, omniscience, is what is so God about God. It's one of those things that distinguishes him from ourselves. Think about it. God never had to go to school. God never had to learn to talk. God never had to take tests. God never had to explore or learn something new. God's knowledge is instantaneous. It's intuitive rather than acquired. He doesn't have to study, and he never forgets. Isn't that wonderful? We forget so much. Not God. He remembers everything. It's estimated that man's accumulated knowledge from the beginning of recorded history, that if you could measure it from the beginning of time that we started measuring knowledge until the age 1845, a year 1845, if that were represented by 1 inch, that's how much knowledge we have acquired. Then the knowledge we've acquired from 1845 to 1945 will be represented by 3 inches. And the knowledge that we have acquired as a race from 1945 to 1975 is the height of the Washington Monument. And now they are telling us that accumulated knowledge doubles every few years. Every couple of years. One report says every 18 months, knowledge doubles. You know how that works in technology. You buy a laptop today, and a couple of years, it's outdated. You need to do what? You need to upgrade, get another computer. But you see, that's all learned. That's accumulated knowledge. God's knowledge is different. It's instantaneous. Our knowledge, compared to his knowledge, is like near zero. We can't even begin to fathom the knowledge that God has when we compare it with our finite mind. The prophet Isaiah asked this in chapter 40, who has understood the mind of the Lord? Now, I've met people over the years who think they understand the mind of the Lord, but they don't. And when they start talking, I know that they don't, but they think they do. I've actually met a few people over the years who have counseled God, and so have you, unsuccessfully, but we have. God, you shouldn't have done that. We're in the counseling mode. God, why didn't you do this? We have our counseling hat on. Who are we? Who do you think we are? God's counselor? Who has known the mind of God? Who has instructed him that you could even presume to counsel him? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him? Who has taught him the right way? Who was it that taught him knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? There is none beside God. We are part nescient. We are non-nescient. In some cases, we are micro-nescient. God is omniscient. The comparison is so strikingly. That's basically what life is all about. You know, I like to watch reruns, especially Western reruns. I like to watch them. And I, even though I know how they're going to turn out, I still like to watch them. And I know what's going to happen in the end. Think about it for the moment. All of life has been a rerun to God. He sees it all. He knows it all. And that's why God can predict the future so accurately. It's like no big deal to him. He can see things and state things in advance even before they happen. Now, we have a tough time prognosticating the weather. And I always love it when the weather person comes on and they predict what's going to happen for the next few days. And then all of a sudden, they don't know what's coming, but what they predicted, what happened weather-wise, didn't happen, and a shift occurs. And when that happens, God bless the weather people, but I kind of have to chuckle to myself. God knows when the weather's going to shift more than they do. This guy was driving through West Texas, and he pulled into a gas station to fill up. And there was a little wooden plaque with a rope dangling from it, and it said at the top of the plaque, weather predictor. So this guy asked the gas attendant, excuse me, I don't get this. How can a rope predict the weather? How can you tell the weather from looking at a rope? And he said, well, sir, it's quite simple. Whenever the rope is dangling, it's windy. Whenever that rope is wet, rain. Whenever that rope is frozen and stiff, snow. When that rope is gone, tornado. So that was supposed to impress people. I mean, big deal. Anybody can predict something while it's going on. That's really not a prediction. But God is different. He's omniscient. Isaiah chapter 46. I am God, there is no other. I make known the end from the beginning. That's his ability. His ability to see things from the end to the beginning. The omniscience of God. Now, I want you to notice here in this psalm, he starts out talking in generality terms, but then he makes the transition to a more personal level. Look what he says here. Notice, as you read through here, the personal pronouns of David. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my setting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path, my lying down. You are acquainted with all my ways. It wasn't academic to David. To David, it was personal. Here is David, the psalmist, musing at God's omniscience of David himself. And David takes comfort in that. Now what we need to do, I've told you this many times over the years, what we do is when we read and study the Bible, we need to personalize it. We don't have to be philosophical or theological when it comes to studying the Bible. We need to personalize it. And when it comes to God's Word, we must move it from our head knowledge down into our heart and learn to personalize it. What is God saying to me as I read this portion of Scripture? By the way, there are three stages of Bible study. There is the observation stage. That's where you find out what it says. Then there's the interpretation stage. That's where you find out what it means. And then there's the application stage, which is where you find out what it means to me personally. You know what a lot of people do? They go through stage one, and they observe the Scripture, and they go through stage two, the interpretation stage, but they don't complete step three. What is God saying to me through the Scripture? And this is one way that God speaks to us, is through His Word. I like what J.L. Packard wrote. He said, whenever we embark on any line of study in God's holy book, we need to ask ourselves, what is my ultimate aim and object in occupying my mind with these things? What's my goal? What's my purpose? What's my aim? What do I intend to do with my knowledge about God once I've got it? What am I going to do with it? If we pursue theological knowledge for its own sake, it's bound to go bad on us. It will make us proud and conceited. The very greatness of such a subject will intoxicate us. You know what? When I read that quote by J.L. Packer, I thought, yeah, he is right on point, because I have known over the years some drunk theologians. I have known some pastors and teachers who are intoxicated with their own knowledge. What I mean by that is they knew a lot of stuff, but it didn't change them inwardly. Some of them still had poor marriages, although they had the knowledge. Some of them still had poor quality of a quiet time alone with the Lord, but they had good knowledge, but it didn't get down to the heart. They had Bible knowledge up here, but they struck out when it came to having enriching relationships in their relational world. It didn't change them from the inside out. And so the ultimate is to take the truth and make application. Put ourselves into it. This is what David is doing in Psalm 139. And notice what he says, "Lord, you have searched me." That word can also mean, "Lord, you have pierced me through and through." You know, sometimes we say, "You know what? I can read right through that person." Have you ever said that to someone? "I can see right through them." Well, that's the idea. And guess what? God could see right through David. And guess what? God can see right through each one of us as well. "And you have known me," which means to examine carefully as to know you from the inside out. God sees through you, so to speak, and God knows you from the inside out. Think about that for a moment. Dealing with a God that knows everything can be a little unsettling. He knows everything. Really? Yeah, he does. He knows everything. You know, people today have a fear of being exposed. We live in a very, very electronic age. There's surveillance cameras all over the place. They check us out when we think no one else is looking. And then we spot that camera up there in the back of the sanctuary. There's one of them. God sees it all. We don't like to be exposed. That's why we pull the shades at night. Don't want anyone looking in. That's why we build fences around our backyard. We don't want anyone looking over into our backyard. We meet someone and we want to put our best foot forward and introduce ourselves in such a way that they'll only know just a part of it. But what would happen if you walked up to someone and you would say, "Well, I tell you what, let me tell you the worst stuff about me." You know what would happen? That other person you're talking to would probably say, "Thanks, but no thanks," and walk away from you because we are afraid of vulnerability. The truth of the scripture is, sorry, too late. God already knows all about us, the good and the bad stuff. God that we're looking at in Psalm 139 is also mentioned in Hebrews 4:13. "There is no creature hidden from his sight. All things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account." To put it bluntly, you cannot pull the wool over God's eyes. You know, the worst thing to try to be before an omniscient God is to be a hypocrite, because God knows everything about you already. So why play the game? I read this story about an elderly but very wealthy grandfather who got his hearing aids and put them in his ear, but he didn't tell his family. And he went back to the doctor a couple of weeks later for a re-examination, and the doctor said, "Well, how's those things working that we put in your ears a couple of weeks ago?" And doctor, he said, "They're working great." "Well," the doctor replied, "I bet your family's really glad that they have a father and grandfather now that can hear." And the grandfather said, "Well, actually, I haven't told them. And it's probably good because, you know, Doc, I've changed my will 3 times since I got these hearing aids in. Lord, you have searched me. You see right through me." And now after making that declaration in verse 2, David kind of breaks it apart. And he begins to study God's knowledge. He knows every moment. You know my setting down, my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down. You're acquainted with all my ways, for there is not a word on my tongue. Behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You have hedged me behind and before, and you laid your hand on me. In the Hebrew language, the word "you" in those verses is emphasized. And it's there for emphasis. There's nobody else that can hold a candle to you, God. That's what the psalmist is saying here. You know, when I was growing up, I used to think that our mom knew everything about us, even though we thought that she didn't know. I remember one time, and my buddy and I, his name was Bobby Ward, he lived down the road a ways, and he lived on a cornfield. His mom and dad raised corn. Great big acreage of corn. And so one summer day, Bobby and I was walking through the cornfield, and we began to pluck the silk tops off of the corn stalks, and we put them in coffee cans. And then we got some old newspapers, and we proceeded to walk into the barn through the rear door so Bobby's mom couldn't see us out of her kitchen window as she looked toward the barn. And so we got in that barn and closed the door, and we pulled up a stool, and we proceeded to roll our own. You know what I'm talking about? We rolled our own and out of those corn stalks, put them in the newspaper, and we proceeded to have a smoke. Well, we thought we were pretty hot stuff. Nobody saw what we were doing. Nobody smelled what we were doing in that old barn. And then we walked into the farmhouse after we were through smoking after about 90 minutes. And his mom said these words: "You boys better quit smoking in the barn. You might burn it down." Now, how did she know? Was God talking to her? But our mothers have an intuition of knowing what we're doing and what we're thinking, even though we don't think she does. God talks to moms, I believe. I remember that we would used to snitch. I don't know about Sherry, but I used to snitch some cookies. Our mom wasn't around. And so I felt pretty good. Had a couple of cookies under my belt, and mom didn't know a thing about it. Well, she came back into the kitchen later on, and she looked at me, and she said, "Son, be sure your sin will find you out." Now, how did you know I snitched some of those cookies? Well, my mom was a good counter. She counted how many she baked and how many was left in that cookie jar, and some was missing. And moms have a inroad into God sometimes, I think, that they do. But notice what the psalmist said. "You know my setting down," he said, "and you know my rising up." God knows that. He knows what time of day I come in at night or in the morning, and he knows what time the alarm is set. And simply put, God's power and all-knowing is inescapable. Everything in life, he's aware of the slightest moment. For example, that look that you gave that driver who cut in front of you on the freeway, he knows the look you gave him because God told me. No, he didn't. But he And that conversation that you had with that driver as he cut in front of you, how many of us tend to talk to the drivers in front of us or behind us? God hears all of that conversation that we are carrying on in our mind. He knows everything. Look at Proverbs 5. He says, "The ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all of his paths." So that perhaps the emphasis there. He knows when we sit down, when we get up. And it teaches us. You know what it teaches us? It teaches us that God is interested in even the most casual acts of life. When I sit down, God is aware of that. When I stand up, God is aware of that. When I'm out cleaning up the backyard, God is aware of that. Remember what Jesus said. Jesus said about the Father. He said how the Father cares about the two sparrows falling to the ground, and they're not even worth a farthing. The very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do you know how many hairs you have on your head right now? I don't know. Neither do you. I'll never know, because the minute you begin to count your hairs, one will probably be missing. The average person, we are told, generally speaking, has about 100,000 hairs. We don't know for sure. Every time you comb your hair or brush it or move it back or the wind blows, more leaves, some never to return. You lose 50 to 100 hairs a day. And God looks upon that full head of hair and God says, 150,278 counting, 64, 63, 62, 50. For some of us, it's easy for God to count the number of hair on our head. But God knows the very hair on your head are numbered. And the point of this is God is so meticulous in what we would see as something that is insignificant and even casual. He's interested in even the most minute details of our lives. Look at verse 17 for just a moment. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. When I'm awake, I will still be with you. Next time you're at the beach, why don't you just pick up a handful of sand and just kind of let it sift through your fingers. And even get a magnifying glass and just count how many sands drop from your hand. How precious are your thoughts. They're more in number than the sand. What a comfort that is. Have you ever felt that closeness to God? Where are you and when are you when you experience a real closeness with God? Well, it could vary depending upon your circumstances and the mood that you're in or the circumstances that you're going through. Do you know when I feel the closest to God? I bet you didn't know this. It's when I'm in my quiet time. Wherever that may be, that's when I feel close to God. And you know what moves me closer to God in my quiet time? Is when I put on music. Music moves me into an awareness of God. And you know which song really brings me into the throne room, so to speak, and into the presence of God? I bet you didn't know this. I'm going to tell you. It's the song called Soften My Heart. Soften my heart, Lord, soften my heart. And that song, I put a link on my e-news this week, and it's sung by the Maranatha Singers. Soften my heart, Lord. And that's what our hearts need to be, pliable and softened, so God can speak to us from His Word. That's when I feel the closest to God. That might be a subject of conversation at the lunch table this afternoon. When do you feel close to God? That's when I feel close to God. And you want to know something else? This message that I'm giving this morning has just turned into part one. Next Sunday will be part two because I'm not finished yet. I've got more to say, but the clock on the wall says, Dale, wind this message up. So I'm not going to wind it up. I'm going to wind it down. And I want us to move to that last slide, I Surrender All. Can you do that, Brendan? Let's direct our attention to the video screen and let's sing that song together in concert with the video, I Surrender All.